Good morning and welcome to Coastal Conversations here on WERU. We explore issues facing Maine's coastal communities through dialogue with people who live, work, and play on our coast. From fisheries to tourism, from energy to environment, from economy to ecology, we go beyond the social media soundbites, probing deeply into complex issues and solutions. Coastal Conversations is supported by Maine Sea Grant in partnership with Skudik Institute and the First Coast. Welcome to this month's episode of Coastal Conversations. Today, we're talking about fish and people. Specifically, we're talking about river herring and the people who are devoted to helping protect these fish and their habitats. We have some great guests today who will tell us all about stewardship of river herring and why they do it. So let's start by having each of you introduce yourselves. Tell us who you are, where you're based, and maybe a little bit about how you got connected to working or volunteering to support river herring populations in Maine's waterways. Emily, let's start with you.
Sure. Hi, my name is Emily Farr. And I am the Senior Fisheries Program Manager at Manomet Conservation Sciences, which is a nonprofit. And we're based out of Brunswick, Maine. And we're really sort of focused broadly on resilience in coastal ecosystems and communities across the Gulf of Maine. And so my work with river herring has really been kind of as this keystone species that ties people and ecosystems together and is really important for a lot of other animals and people along the coast. And so it's one of my favorite areas that I get to work in.
That's great. Thanks, Emily. Welcome to the program. And Bucket, can I have you introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Bucket Davis. My real name is Kenneth, but everybody calls me Bucket. I'm located here in the town of East Jayas. I am the chair of the Board of Selectmen. I have been for about 30 years. I'm also a state legislator, and I serve on the Marine Resource Committee as a state legislator. So that's my background. We do run an education program here with the river heron. And when you're ready to talk about that subject, you let me know.
Great. Thanks, Bucket. You sound like a busy man, really committed to your community. It's great to have you. And Rusty, let's have you introduce yourself.
Yes. Hi, my name is Rusty Taylor. I live on Mount Desert Island, which is near the town of Bar Harbor. And I've kind of come into river herring interest from the ground up as a commercial harvester for other species. Never river herring personally, but I've worked in the lobster industry as crew over the years. And I also am fortunate to live in a village on Mount Desert Island that we have an alewife restoration run. And I'm old enough now to remember when there was fish when I was a little kid and then see the fish kind of disappear from my adolescence or whatever, and then see the restoration, the run come back as with a different perspective as a little bit older is really interesting. So I can kind of see the value of them. And coming from kind of the commercial fishing from the ground up is kind of unique perspective that I think adds well to some of the regulators and other players that are trying to help restore these fish across the Gulf of Maine.
Great. Thank you so much, Rusty. It's great to have you on the show. And last but not least, Sophie, if you would introduce yourself.
Sure. Yeah. No, I'm super excited to be here with everybody. My name is Sophie. Sophie Shivers. I'm a College of the Atlantic alum, and I learned about river herring and river herring work as a student there, volunteering on the run that Rusty works on in Somesville on Mount Desert Island, and then also kind of working on other runs around the state. And I'm currently working with Emily and others for the Gulf of Maine River Herring Network on a project looking specifically at sort of why people take care of their runs and the kinds of activities that they're involved in. So yeah, that's me.
Great. Thank you, Sophie. So we're here to talk about river herring, and we have a person who is deeply engaged in a municipality. We have a commercial harvester who's also doing a lot of local work. We have somebody representing a nonprofit who works with river herring, and we have a student. We have a great mix of folks today to kind of help us understand the species and the stewardship that's happening in many, many different parts of the coast around river herring. It would be great for our listeners to wrap their brains a little bit around what do we mean by river herring? That might be a good place to start. So Sophie, I'm going to ask you to share a little bit about what are river herring? What species are we talking about when we say that? And also, we've already used words like runs and sea run fish, and maybe in the introduction to the species, you could also tell us what we mean by those words.
Absolutely. Yeah. So river herring are these small silver fish that spend most of their life out at sea, but kind of run back up to these ponds and streams inland to spawn every year, so to sort of reproduce. And that we call that anadromous generally, or sea run. So those are what those terms mean. And we typically refer to the individual sort of stream or population of river herring that's coming up to a specific place as a run. And it happens every spring, and it's this pretty spectacular experience over the course of a few months or a couple weeks, depending on where you are. You'll have all these fish coming back up, kind of swimming up this stream. And then to provide just a little bit of context as to why it's difficult for these fish, or why we're all here doing this work, there are a lot of barriers in our natural streams. Culverts, dams, beaver dams sometimes, even extreme water conditions can make it difficult for the fish to get upstream. So they actually require a little bit of help in most places to get to their kind of final destination and then back out to the ocean.
And speaking of work to protect the runs, I know that you're all connected to a larger initiative called the River Herring Network in the Gulf of Maine. And before we dive into the details of the kinds of stewardship work that you all are up to, Emily, would you kind of help our listeners understand the larger scope of what the network of folks are up to involved in helping protect river herring through the River Herring Network?
Sure, yeah. So the Gulf of Maine River Herring Network is something that I've been lucky enough to help facilitate for the last about 4 years since it's been around. And it really kind of came about, this network, because as Sophie was describing, these fish connect a lot of different ecosystems from the ocean up into lakes and ponds and streams. And they also connect a lot of different people. There's community members kind of stewarding them on the ground. There's researchers that are trying to answer the many questions that we still have about these species. There's state and federal agencies. So the network is really trying to kind of bring all of these different people together to exchange knowledge and figure out ways that we can all collaborate to support these really important fish in our ecosystems and in our communities. So over the past couple of years, a lot of that has looked like collaborative monitoring work that has been happening on the ground, working with communities to kind of monitor the fish that are returning and then the juvenile or baby fish that are going back out to the ocean after they reproduce, to collect information about temperature, about the food that the river herring are eating, and a number of things to help us kind of better understand migration patterns and provide important information for both community members on the ground as well as those that are managing the fish at kind of the state and interstate level. So yeah, the network is really kind of this place for people who are deeply engaged in river herring at different scales to learn from other people kind of working on other runs, maybe next door. And I think to me, the power of the network is those connections between people to hear people kind of talk about, what's working in my watershed or what's not, and what challenges are we facing that maybe another person is facing somewhere else that we can kind of learn from, and figure out ways that we can all collaborate better.
Great, thank you, Emily. And Rusty and Bucket, you are some of those folks who are working in your communities on stewardship of river herring. And We'd love to hear what you guys are up to. Rusty, do you want to get us started by just like tell us about some of the work that you're doing related to stewardship of river herring in Soamesville and any other communities that you're working with?
Oh, yes. So we are so fortunate here in Soamesville. We have the benefit slash burden, I call it. We have a recovering run of alewives, but we actually have a counting station at the dam because there's a dam. It's only about 6 feet high in Soamesville, but even that little small dam in the grand scheme of things blocks tens of thousands of fish from being able to make that springtime migration from the ocean up to the pond. So to collect data, a lot of places will do like an extrapolation of a time set of account. But here in Soamesville, we have this really unique situation where we actually have a counting gate threshold, which I was concerned about at first, but that's where the network of folks comes in, and not specifically the River Herring Network, but folks in our community network to make sure that the gate is, we open the gate three, four, five, six times a day during the run to actually do a physical count. And that's a place where I've played a role. But we also have folks from, you know, away that have never even seen a river herring that come down and count with us, which I think is awesome. But then there's things, you know, like the minutia when the excitement of the fish is gone and there's like the homework, the like, you know, details like that. And that's, I'm a local. So when everyone else runs away, you know, for the winter, I'm here to collaborate with folks and, you know, move rocks or work on the baffles. The fish ladder is just like it sounds. It's a series of steps that help the fish get from one elevation to a higher elevation. And that takes a lot of work to upkeep because it's just that so many of our watersheds, our brooks and rivers have been compromised from man-made activities that it really takes kind of an extra bit of care to make sure that there's passage for these fish to get around some of the barriers that have been placed in their way.
And so, in addition to helping make sure that the barriers are removed so that the fish can move freely in the waterway, you're also counting the fish. Why are you counting the fish as they're coming back in?
So yes, we, as I mentioned, we have the counting gate. So we get an actual count with a sports counter. And some days we might count two fish. Some days you might count over 2,000 fish in a few minutes. So that's long-term data that we're collecting. And it's unique in that it's not a trend data, it's actual. So we have a very solid snapshot of how many fish are coming into the system. And we can share that with other folks. With we had over 450 elementary school students from around the state visit our fish run while there was fish running actively this spring. And that's so powerful to have people see it versus just see it on a video or a book or hear someone talking and not and pointing at something that's empty. The fish are doing, showing, you know, making the show for us. And then there's a lot of questions that come from that. People naturally want to engage, and it's a great way to engage with the community and specifically with kids in the community because, you know, they just get really excited about the fish. So, and then that brings up the whole series of, you know, other things to learn about. Yeah, it's a great way to engage with the community and educate the community.
Very cool. You're listening to Coastal Conversations on WERU at 89.9 FM and streaming online at WERU.org. Okay, let's switch gears to working our way a little bit down east for a minute to East Machias. Bucket, tell us a little bit about the work that you guys have going on with River Herring down your way.
Well, here in East Machias, we run an education program. We're right handy right onto the ocean. So when the alewives come in, where we work with the students, that's about as fresh as you're going to get it because it's salt water right there. But it's a long run from here, from the East Machias River. It goes way through to Pokey Dam up off of Route 9. And in between, we've got all these lakes. There is absolutely no structures whatsoever to barricade these. There used to be a big dam downtown that the hydro company had. It was a mess, and I got that removed. But back, it's been many, many years ago, the town had a legislated law that once those fish came into East Machias, even the whole length that they ran going through other towns and townships, the fish belong to the town of East Machias. So no other towns or townships above us has the authority to harvest those fish. And the reason is for that, if you didn't have that control, there'd be no way that you could manage a good harvest and a protection for the fish. So that works out very well for us. Here in, at the Elm Street School, the principal, Tony Maker, quite a few years ago, approached me and wanted to know if I could set up an education program to teach these kids, because it's part of history down here. And I've always been involved with the Alwis back when they had the regular stands on the river. And then at, later on in the 70s, I did it commercially before I'd become a slick person. But we run the education program with these children. These children, they dip their own fish with a hand dip net. It's a huge net. We do everything the old-fashioned way. And they will take those fish, split them. We have to record for the DMR, Marine Resource. They have to scale samples. They have to weigh the fish. They have to identify if it's a male or a female. They also have to, because there are blueback heron and alwis, which are the two different fish, they have to identify these species and the water temperature and so forth. So these kids process these fish, and we have a special license, and we smoke them the way they always did. And we do the whole ones, and then we do the kippers. And we just set them out there in a cooler, and once the people know the alwis are done, they come with, and they can take them. There's absolutely no cost. And a lot of people still love the smoked fish because it was part of their growing up, you know. And even the younger generation likes it quite well. I did want to share with you the in Rockland, Maine, they have the Fisherman Forum. It's usually in March, I believe. My 7th and 8th grade students went up there last year. They were invited to come up to speak about the alwi harvest, and they did a super job. And there's a lot of lobster fishermen there, halibut fishermen. Anyone that works on the water goes to this in Rockland. And the kids I took stole that show. It was unbelievable. Believe it or not, we've had a lot of different schools come. We had some 7th, 8th grade kids 3 or 4 years ago from Massachusetts. The principal had gotten in touch because a lot of us, the stuff we do is on Facebook and so forth. And they got in touch with me and wanted to know if they could bring their students down. And they put them up in the motel for a couple of days and had their students involved with my kids hands-on. And if you could see these people that stop that's never seen fish, I mean, it's just thousands of these fish that come in. And it's usually in May. They're coming in to spawn into the fresh water. And you can always tell when the fish are here because the river is full of seals, conrads, eagles. Eagles are just unbelievable to watch them. And, of course, the seagulls are trying to get a meal. But keep in mind, a seagull's got a web feet, so he has quite a difficult job. He has to use his beak to push the alwis in against the rock. That's the only way he can get one. So. But when they're in real thick, they seem to get what they want. So.
I heard your kids' presentation. Sorry to interrupt, Natalie. I heard the presentation at Rockland and the public speaking experience, everything for them. It was awesome.
I thought you looked familiar, but I couldn't place you. So.
Yeah, that's me.
That's great. Emily, can I ask you to kind of zoom out for us for a second? We're hearing these great stories of kids and community members really involved in river herring work on the ground. Can you help us put it into context of, like, why are we monitoring and maybe what the relationship is between stewardship and the monitoring? Kind of zoom out a little bit.
Sure, yeah. So a lot of the monitoring that is going on for river herring, so Bucket mentioned and Rusty talked about counting the fish that are coming back, collecting scale samples, the age of the fish, the sex of the fish, and all of that information is really important to collect for the Maine Department of Marine Resources and then managers kind of at the interstate East Coast level to be able to understand how these river herring are doing, how their populations are doing kind of from a big picture, and also how they're doing at each individual run so that we can make, you know, management decisions about harvesting them, about, you know, restoration that might need to happen in the river to improve the population, things like that. So that's, you know, one of the main reasons why all of this information is really important. And I think from the perspective of kind of stewardship, one of the things that Sophie's really working a lot on, and I know she's talked a lot with Rusty and Bucket and a lot of other kind of stewards along the coast, is that, you know, there are so many community members, harvesters, organizations that are putting countless hours in every year to collecting this information, but also, as both Rusty and Bucket talked about, you know, repairing baffles on fishways and making sure the fish can actually get into their habitat. You know, if there's beavers that are blocking fish passage, maybe notching beaver dams so the fish can get through, making sure, like, if there's a dry year that the fish can get in and out, there's enough water flow. So there's just a ton of work that has to happen at the local level. And it's really important for us to kind of understand what all that work looks like so that we can really support it going forward. We can support both the people and the people who are supporting the fish.
And a question for any of you. I know that some of the most active stewards on many of these runs are commercial fish harvesters. And I wonder if you guys could speak to that a little bit. Rusty, you yourself, I know, are a commercial harvester.
Well, if I could just speak to that for a second, is like, yeah, kind of a unique situation. As I mentioned, I do commercially harvest some other species, but not specifically alewives or river herring. But it's really interesting because, as you say, a lot of the runs are supported by fisheries-based participation. But here in Solmsville, ours is a restoration run that is being led by Solms Mine Elf Wildlife Sanctuary and Billy Halperin, the executive director there. And that is the lead of the education portion of that. And we're leveraging our fish instead of, the numbers are still too tenuous. They're 1 year, the returning run of fish is 30,000, but then we've had some severe drought years and we've dropped below 10,000 fish. So we've had these really large variances in fish, and personally, and even Department of Marine Resources would probably not certify our run numbers wise to be harvested. But does it? So I've had fishermen friends of mine say, well, what good are those fish? You know, and I explain we're using them as an educational tool to, you know, for these schools and these kids to come see them who have never seen them, to learn and grow the appreciation and why they're important. And that also the majority of commercial harvesters have come to that. They can understand that when I say that, because their first thing is, why aren't these fish being harvested? And what good are they? Like, I, not to repeat myself, but it's kind of neat to see someone come to an understanding that, oh, there is other value and we're reaching for a larger overarching goal here, using these fish specifically here as an education resource.
Yeah, Sophie.
I think one of the things that I've been hearing and learning as I've been talking to people and through the work that I've done over the years with river herring is that this stewardship is unbelievably time consuming. It takes a huge amount of time to go daily or several times a day down to the stream to count the fish, check on them, take scale samples, make sure they can get up where they need to go, make sure that the water is coming out like it needs to be if you're kind of running a dam or have any kind of control over that. Net them over obstacles. And I think in some cases that can be supported and sustained with sort of money or time from NGOs, or there's a really strong and diverse volunteer contingent that can help with that. But in other places, the way that that really gets sustained and happens is through commercial harvest. And so I think that's one of the spots where harvest has been a really important motivator, where there isn't another kind of way to help folks support that time and that work, or to incentivize maybe isn't the right term, because I think people do this for many, many reasons, as Rusty's really nicely laid out for us. But I think there's in many places, that's a really important piece of it, is just like how to make it sustainable for the people that are doing the work day after day.
Yeah, bucket, go for it.
Yeah, I just wanted to add a little bit to that. Here in East Machias, where we work with the students, that's the main river. We're only on one shore. We have nothing across the river. But we don't fish the main river down here. So we do have an off branch off the main river that goes into Gardner's Lake. As a select person, we put that out to bid for commercial harvesting. One of the requirements is in East Machias, you must be a resident to bid on this. And so whoever is awarded that bid, they harvest the LYs mainly for the lobster fishermen and the halibut trawlers. And I have to monitor that as well as the other two selectmen to make sure they're following the rules that's set up by the town and the state. And there's closure days, and I have to really overlook that, you know, make sure that they're following these guidelines. Because if you don't, you could lose your rights to harvest, and you could hurt the harvest population, too. So I did just want to mention that, too. But without those fish, it would hurt down here our people that work out on the water, because bait is very hard to get.
Yeah, and these fish, alewives and river herring are used as bait for lobster traps.
Yes, for lobster trap, but they also use them for fishing, catching halibut on lines. It's probably one of the best halibut bait that you can get as an alewife. So.
Yeah, Emily.
Yeah, just to sort of tie what Bucket and Sophie said together, I think one of the kind of unique things about the river herring fishery is that the stewardship is really built into the way that the fishery is structured, that the harvesters are often the ones that are responsible for collecting a lot of the biological data that needs to be collected for management. So there's this real kind of relationship there that's built into the way that the harvest is managed. And I think, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find a harvester that, you know, maybe got involved originally in river herring because of commercial harvest, but I think everyone's motivation has kind of grown beyond that. And there's so much work and care that goes into the stewardship that's beyond just the commercial value, that's sort of thinking about their broader role in the ecosystem.
Well, thank you all so much. This has been great chatting with you. I really appreciate your time. Really great to hear about the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Natalie.
Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in to this month's episode of Coastal Conversations. Join us on the fourth Friday of each month at 4 p.m. for information, stories, and conversations about the issues and people of the Maine coast. That great music you're hearing in the background is called A Following Sea and was composed and performed by Paul Anderson. On behalf of Maine Sea Grant and in partnership with Skudik Institute and the First Coast, we wish you a good weekend.